Hi, this is Josh Cook. Thank you for downloading the North Jackson Church of Christ sermon audio file. If you have any questions or would like to contact us, check out our website at northjacksonchurchofchrist.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in our worship service. You're always welcome at North Jackson Church of Christ.
Thank you, Ray, John, and David, for getting us off to a great start. Thanks to each and every one of you for being here this morning, and thanks to all of those who have had a part in our services thus far, and a big special thanks to our Bible school teachers, and how blessed we are at North Jackson to have so many capable, talented Bible school teachers, and what a blessing the Bible school program is to our lives spiritually. Someone once said, "As our families go, so goes our nation." He was right, you know. What every family needs is a home built by the Lord. But how? Let's talk about it. No matter how hard you try, no matter how many times you proofread it, inevitably there are going to be bloopers that will pop up in your church bulletin. And you've seen some of these. Let me just read a few of them to you. For example, this one that appeared in a church bulletin. The sermon this morning, Jesus walks on water. The sermon tonight, searching for Jesus. Or this one that we see quite often, remember in prayer the many who are sick of our church and community. Or I like this one, low self-esteem support group will meet Thursday at 7 to 8:30 p.m. Please use the back door. I don't know how successful that will be. And then, of course, you have the ones dealing with marriage. Let us join David and Lisa in the celebration of their wedding and bringing their happiness to a conclusion. Irving Benson and Jesse Carter were married on October 24 in the church. So ends a friendship that began in their school days. We tend to have fun with marriage and perhaps with our children. I remember reading someone once said that marriage is an institution, but who wants to be in an institution? It's much more than that, isn't it? Of course it is. The family today is really no laughing matter, is it? We still live in a country where divorces happen at a rate of one out of every two marriages. We also live in a country, unfortunately, for the first time in the history of this great country, more people are living together than are actually married. We live in a country where people who divorce and remarry are three times greater to divorce again than those who have been married only once. On and on, the statistics could go. I could read many more of them to you. It just simply shows us that the family is in peril in many places, for many reasons. You may have read this week, or this past week, that in our world, the number one cause of death is abortion. You knew it might get there someday, but now it's a reality that abortion is the number one cause of death above accidents, natural disasters, cancer or heart attacks or strokes or any other kind of illness that robs people of their lives. What kind of world do we live in where abortions are so frequent that that now has become the number one cause of death in our world? The family is in desperate need of help. So why do we turn to Solomon? It almost seems contradictory, doesn't it? The psalm that was just read was written by Solomon. Solomon wrote at least two psalms. This psalm he writes, and was it not Solomon who had 700 wives and 300 concubines? Was it not 1 Kings 11 verse 4 that said that his wives turned his heart away from the Lord after other gods, and his heart was not as devoted to the Lord as was the heart of his father David? If Solomon didn't use God's advice in building his house, and learned the hard way what it takes to build a real home. Perhaps we can learn from him, even from his mistakes. And some of our best lessons are learned from our mistakes, aren't they? It's interesting that Solomon is the man who built the house of God. He built the temple of God, remember? And after he built it, he prayed, thanking God for building it. He understood the importance of God being in the plans and God being in the project and God building the house. Unfortunately, he just didn't translate that into his personal life. But if you read Ecclesiastes and it's his last writing, we understand that in the end he understood that God needs to be in the middle of everything we do. And if he's not there, then all will fail. It's also interesting, as David pointed out, this is a psalm of ascent. And there were several psalms of ascent, meaning as the people went up to the city of Jerusalem to worship, they traveled in caravans and they traveled in families. And as they did, they sang psalms, much like this one. And so if you're with your family and you're singing this psalm as you go up into the house of God, you're realizing, if you're listening and paying attention, that unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. And so as we think about what every family needs, we think this morning about a home built by the Lord and what that might look like. I want to start today a series of lessons on the home. As we begin 2019, may it be the aim and priority of each one of us to make our homes stronger, to make our marriages stronger, and in the process, make our church and our country stronger. And I know this morning I'm talking to people who've not even yet married. I'm talking to people who are married yet don't have children. I know I'm talking to those who are married who may not want children. And there are those who are married who desperately want children but can't have them. And I sympathize so deeply with you. And I understand that I'm talking this morning to some who are divorced. I know I'm talking to some who are this morning a single parent trying to rear their child in the admonition and nurture of the Lord on their own. And I know I'm talking to parents who are divided. You're here this morning, but your spouse is somewhere else. Maybe in another congregation, in a different church, or maybe not even there, but at home. I know there are some who've already reared their children and are now working on their grandchildren. I know that maybe what we talk about is a little narrowed toward those who are married and have children and who have a home and are trying to build their home. But perhaps something that we talk about this morning from this psalm, some principle from this psalm, will address each of us, or will find a place in the heart of each of us. So this morning, as we think about what every family needs, and we think about a home built by the Lord, first of all, think with me about the necessity of a solid foundation. We realize that the foundation of a house is the most important part of that building. Its chief cornerstone, of course, first laid, but this magnificent building is only as strong as its foundation. Your home, my home, our houses are only as strong as our foundations. You get a crack in your foundation and you're in serious problems. And there are too many families today that have severe cracks in their foundations. And unless the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain that build it. And unless the Lord lays the foundation of our home, then we're being warned by Solomon here that there are going to be numerous cracks in that foundation. Solomon learned that to be true, and he learned it the hard way. He's telling us, don't be like that. Be different than that. As we think about the Lord blessing our marriage or blessing our home, taking a house and making it a home, and not just any home, but a Christian home, think about the way God blesses us on a daily basis. It's like a little boy who was trying to describe to his mother an elevator. He said, I got into this little room and the upstairs came down. You don't think about being on an elevator that way. I'm generally just scared to death, hoping that it makes its destination. But you think about the Lord as we go into our little rooms of prayer, time with him, that heaven comes down. And it is in that environment that we build a happy, successful marriage. And it is in that environment, of course, that we build a home built by the Lord and sustained and protected by the Lord. It is in the New Testament, isn't it, that Paul says the true foundation is Jesus Christ. What is it? 1 Corinthians 3, verse 11. For other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Jesus talked about the importance of a foundation, didn't he? The foundation in life, but the foundation even in a home. As he closed the greatest sermon ever preached, and by the way, he mentioned the home. In Matthew 7, 24 and following, remember his words? Whosoever heareth these words of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man, which built his house on a rock, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell not because it was founded on a rock. And whoever hear these words of mine, or these teachings of mine, and doeth them not, I will liken him unto a foolish man, which built his house on the sand, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And I submit to you this morning, as each family falls, as each house falls, it is a great fall, it is a great failure, and it impacts you, and it impacts me. The marriage is only as strong as its foundation. If God is in it and he's in every part of it, then it'll be blessed. If God isn't in it, if God isn't a part of it, then it is doomed to fail, ultimately, eternally, but in the process, not be as successful as it perhaps could be. And the reason Solomon says, unless the Lord builds a house, they labor in vain that build it. The reason that's apropos for us this morning is because too many people are trying to build their homes without the Lord. Too many people are trying to build their marriages without the Lord. Is that perhaps the reason why the marriages in our country are in such peril and our homes are being destroyed slowly but surely? I ran across this study that was done by a college in Wisconsin, and they were looking at the ingredients to a good harvest. And here's what they found. It was reported that the production of 100 bushels of corn from 1 acre required 4 million pounds of water, 6,800 pounds of oxygen, 5,200 pounds of carbon, 160 pounds of nitrogen, 125 pounds of potassium, 75 pounds of yellow sulfur, and other elements too numerous to list. And it also pointed out that for that crop to be successful, you're going to have rain and sunshine, just the right amount at just the right time. And you can't discount the hard work and labor of the farmer on his farm. But they concluded that for that crop to be successful, only 5% of it would be attributable to the farmer. 95% of it attributed to the providence of God. Rain at the right time, and enough rain, not too much, not too little. We have a number of farmers in this congregation. I'll guarantee you, they'll tell you in a heartbeat, it is the Lord that produces the harvest. And so we begin with a solid foundation, but now we turn to secure walls. And again, our house is only as strong as its walls. Solomon goes on to say in verse 1, that if the Lord does not watch over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. Every city was guarded and guarded with a watchtower and a watchman. And the watchman was to stay awake at all times because he was to blow the trumpet to alarm the people if an enemy was attacking. So he was a very important part of protecting the city. But Solomon says, it doesn't matter if the watchman is awake every waking minute of the day. If the Lord doesn't protect your city is going to still collapse. In other words, it's not as protected as it surely needs to be. But if the Lord is there, and the Lord is watching over us, and the Lord is in every detail of our marriage, every detail of rearing our children, then we are truly blessed because we are truly protected. When Kathy and I got married in 1979, can you believe it? It seems like yesterday to me, but that was a long time ago, I promise you. Over 39 years ago. I can remember our first home in Henderson, Tennessee on Main Street. It had four walls. And those four walls were divided into three rooms. We had one big room where we had our living room and our bedroom. We had a bathroom and a kitchen. And I can remember when her dad came to visit us for the lectureship, and the only thing that separated our bedroom from our living room was this little partition, the shallow folding partition. I wish I still had that. And I remember her dad came, and we, of course, were in our bed, and we folded out the couch and made it into a bed, and that's where he slept. And remember, there's only that little partition between us, and I had just gotten into bed. I mean, I had just laid my head on my pillow, and I heard what sounded like a locomotive headed straight for the house. It sounded like my house was right on the top of the railroad tracks, and the train was going to destroy us all. I had never heard anything like that. Kathy looked at me and giggled and said, "That's my daddy." And boy, was it ever her daddy. I can remember being in that little house, and we didn't even have a phone. We used the phone of our landlord. We couldn't afford it. And I remember one evening we wanted a Coke so badly, and we didn't have any Cokes, and we didn't have any money. And so we decided to go through the cushions in the couch. You ever done that? We went through the cushions in the couch, and we came up with 75 cents. And I walked from our house to Miller's Big Star and got us a Coke. We split it with a bowl of popcorn. That was pretty much our diet. And it was one of the happiest days of my life. And that was long before Jack's was there, or Wendy's, or McDonald's, or Taco Bell. Nothing was there except Miller's Big Star and a vending machine that took 75 cents and change. Four walls. And yet God can do with those four walls what no man could ever accomplish. I think about the wall of communication. And the Bible is so true when it talks about a man or a woman and their communication with one another. For example, from Proverbs 25:17, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and baskets of silver. In ancient times, a king would have a basket on his table, and it would be overlaid with silver, and in that basket would be apples. But one of those apples would be a solid gold apple. And his guests would gather around his table and would become merry. And then the king would stand and announce that one guest at his table received that golden apple. Could you imagine receiving an apple of solid gold today? How fabulously wealthy you would be if you received that. Then he would give it to that person, recognizing that person and blessing that person's life. Listen, a word of encouragement at the very right time, needed time, is like receiving that apple out of that basket of silver. And then I think about that a man is to be slow to speak and quick to hear from James 1:19. In other words, we should want to listen more than we should want to speak. We should want to hear and understand what someone else is saying instead of wanting ourselves to be heard and wanting ourselves to receive what we want. It's the other person. Communication is a two-way street, of course, but it is so necessary, isn't it, to a great marriage and a successful marriage. Do you remember Elkanah and Hannah in the Old Testament? In 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 8, Elkanah said to Hannah, talking to her now, "Why are you so sorrowful, and why won't you eat, and why are you so downcast?" And Hannah explained to him that, "I can't have children." And Elkanah responded to her by saying, "Am I not better to you than 10 sons?" Elkanah would have never known the heart of Hannah had he not been listening and had he not communicated. And we are communicating by what we say, and many times communicating even better by what we don't say. We need to tell our spouses every day how much we love them. We need to tell our children how much we love them. We not only need to hear those words, we need to say those words. The first wall of our house is communication. The second wall is commitment. And commitment to God first, of course, but commitment to His Bible or the Word, to prayer, to the church, to worship, and then, of course, committed to our children, and all of this above our careers. Our careers can't get in the way of what is most important to us. I once read a German proverb that said, "Many children leads to many prayers, and many prayers lead to many blessings." It's so true, isn't it, that when we depend upon the Lord and commit ourselves to following His will and His word and His teachings in our marriages and our homes, that wall stands straight and strong and protects us and provides for us in so many wonderful ways. Our Lord talked about commitment in marriage in really no uncertain terms. He just went right to the heart of the matter. Have you not read that He which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, "For this cause shall a man leave father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Wherefore they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God had joined together, let not man put asunder. And then he put a nail in it in verse 9 when he said, but I say unto you, whosoever divorces his wife, except for fornication, commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is put away doth also commit adultery. There's really no getting around that, is it? Marriage is for keeps. It's between a man and a woman. It's for life. Only two ways that marriage can be dissolved: the death of one of those spouses or marital unfaithfulness. And even when marital unfaithfulness has occurred, that doesn't necessarily mean the divorce needs to follow. God intended our marriages to work, and out of those marriages come homes that would work. So if that wall is commitment, we are in good shape. Did you read this past week about the man and woman in the nursing home in DeKalb County, Illinois? She and he had been married for 67 years, but for some reason she lost her wedding band and her engagement ring. Did you see this? I don't know how she lost it, but she was just sick. And so what did he do? Well, he had to come up with a ruse to get out of the nursing home without her knowing where he was going. So his daughter made up this plan that he had to go for an appointment. And he did, in a way, had to go for an appointment. And so she snuck him out of the nursing home. He went and bought her another engagement ring and wedding ring. Gave it to her for Christmas. And her tears of joy are worthy of YouTube or any other outlet. It's about 67 years of marriage and still feeling that flame, that fire, that love for someone else. A third wall is consideration. But be ye kind one to another and tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. A marriage is based upon consideration. It's based upon kindness. It's based upon generosity and forgiveness and grace. Walls need to give, and sometimes walls need to be actually flexible. But in a marriage, this is necessary. I love what Francis of Assisi said, and I don't care if he did say it. He prayed it, actually, but it's true. We may disagree with this theology, but no one can disagree with these words. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen. That's what marriage is all about. It's ultimately give and take. It sacrifices for the other person. But being considerate and being polite and being courteous does stay in the home as well as extend beyond the walls and the borders of the home. We actually take our home with us wherever we go. So how can we compartmentalize it so easily? We can't. That's the problem, isn't it? A fourth wall is the wall of companionship. And really what I had in mind was the fun that a marriage is. A real marriage, a good marriage, a divine marriage, a marriage acceptable in the eyes of God and one that's blessed by God, one in which God is in the midst of all of it, is so much fun. The friendship is there, family is there, and all of this makes for a great life, doesn't it? If we're blessed to have children, we are truly blessed. Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hands of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Blessed is he who hath his quiver full of them, for they shall not be ashamed, and they shall speak well of him before the enemies at the gate. Couple of things here. Children bring us great pride, don't they? I don't know of anything that's more of a blessing in my life than my family. And you may say the same thing this morning. But I also know this, that a family that is governed by God, led by God, and is in everything that that family does, and those children grow up to be godly and grow up to be what the Lord would have them to be, that's a great testimony of the power of God. That's a great confession to the world about what God can do in a marriage. And I know it doesn't work every time. And I know there are people who do everything right in their marriages and everything right in their homes, everything right with their children, and still they go wayward. That's why you have the story of the prodigal son in the Bible. But we never give up on them, and they do know the way back, because when they were young, we did what was right. We did the right things. We taught them the right ways. When God is in that marriage and in that home, then much good will come from it. But there's nothing like the companionship of a good mate and a good family. I love it in Genesis 1:20, when God created Adam, or Eve rather, for Adam. Eve is described as a suitable companion for him. I submit to you that Adam, that's Genesis 2:20, I'm sorry. I say to you that Adam really did not know happiness or contentment or companionship until the Lord blessed him with just a perfect mate. God's still doing that, of course. A merry heart doeth good, like good medicine, Proverbs 15:17 teaches us. In other words, a happy wife, a happy life, a happy family, and a happy ending. 1 year ago today, and you may get this on Facebook or whatever. I don't do that. I don't get it, but I get it through Kathy, and Kathy explains it to me. But 1 year ago today, we were in Nazareth in the Bible lands, and I was preaching in Nazareth, the hometown of our Lord. That trip would have meant nothing had she not been with me. And I did have an opportunity 30 years earlier to go, and it would have made a big difference in my preaching and my teaching, but because she couldn't go, I wouldn't go. There's nothing like a family that God gives us and blesses us with, and it's in everything that we do. He's in all of our plans. It's that kind of strength and companionship in a marriage, that consideration, commitment, and communication that takes place that makes our four walls, walls of integrity. But finally, what about our roof? A sound roof of love. I've got to tell you, this morning, our roof is leaking. We've had several people come out and look at it, and finally someone found the leak. But I've got to tell you, it's been miserable since it started leaking. It's just not any fun. And we've filled the buckets and we've emptied the buckets, but whenever it rains, the roof leaks. We finally got to the bottom line, but as you know, it costs $1 million to repair anything these days. So it's annoying. We want a big roof, a sound roof, a well-pitched roof, a strong roof. What does that look like? I know Peter isn't talking about the roof, but listen to what Peter says. And above all, put on fervent or sincere or genuine love among yourselves, for love covers a multitude of sins. I know he isn't talking about the roof of a house, but may you permit me to employ that as the roof of our house, that everything is held together by the love of God and our love for each other. 1 Corinthians 13 tells us so well what love looks like. Love is patient and kind. Love envieth not, vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. If you don't hear anything else I say this morning, listen to these words. Love never fails. And now abides faith, hope, and love, these three, but the greatest of these is love. A solid foundation, four secure walls, but that roof above us is a roof of love. Joseph Sabath, you may have heard his name. He was a divorce court judge for over 40 years, and he compiled what he called to be his 10 commandments of a successful marriage. And I want to close with him this morning. He bragged that he had seen so many divorces and so many marriages destroyed that if people would only listen to these words and follow these words, then their marriages would have a 95% success rate. He said he came up with this list because he was tired of the nightmare that is divorce court. Go to the next slide, guys. Here it is. I hope you can read it. More than anything else, I hope it comes up. Yes, don't you love technology? Here it is. And this is marriage, isn't it? This is marriage 101. This is a man who's been on the bench as a judge presiding over divorces, and I'm sure marriages, for 40 years or more. Bear and forbear. Work together, play together, and grow up together. Avoid the little quarrels, and the big ones will take care of themselves. Compromise, give and take. Practice sympathy, good humor, and mutual understanding. Don't grouch before breakfast or after it. Respect your in-laws, but don't criticize them or take criticism from them. Establish your own home, even if in a one-room flat. Fight for each other, but not with each other. And then finally, build your home on religious faith with love and forgiveness as the watchword. Except the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it. Someone recently said, and I think it is so appropriate and so true, no culture has ever been able to provide a better shipyard for building storm-proof vessels for the journey of man from cradle to the grave than the individual nourished in a loving home. And I would add, with God's blessing, what every family needs is a home built by the Lord. And this morning, as we think about the invitation and we think about becoming a Christian and we ask ourselves, what must I do to be saved? I'm pretty sure most of you here know exactly what to do to be saved, but some still aren't saved. Some are still unsaved because they've not yet followed the direction of the Lord. Listen, except the Lord build the house. I mean, that goes for a country, that goes for a congregation, that goes for business. Yes, that goes for a family, goes for marriage, goes for a home, but it goes for your life and mine too. And this morning, Dad, the best thing you could do for your children is obey the gospel or be restored if necessary. Best thing you could do, Mom, for your household is to obey the gospel if you haven't, or be restored if you need to be. The best thing, son or daughter, that you can do for your family and for your parents is to obey the gospel if you need to do that, or if you need to be restored as well, because the family is only as strong, literally, as God is in the planning, building, and forever in every detail, every decision. So if you're here this morning and you want to make your family stronger or your home built by the Lord, it starts with Him, it ends with Him. And if you're ready to begin this morning the walk of a Christian, we encourage you to come while together we stand and sing.